You're listening to a University of Minnesota Bookstore author event podcast, recorded live from our location in Kauffman Memorial Union on the U of M's Twin Cities campus. For more information on upcoming author events, please visit our website at bookstore.umn.edu.
Our guests today are Elizabeth Bourke Johnson and Ted Bowman. They're editors of a new anthology of poetry entitled The Wind Blows, The Ice Breaks. Elizabeth Bourke Johnson, PhD, has encountered grief as a nurse and a nurse educator. She has taught both writing and literature at the University of Minnesota and developed a course called Writing Through Grief in the university's Complete Scholar program. Ted Bowman is an author and educator who has taught family education courses at the University of Minnesota since 1981 and served on the board of the National Association for Poetry Therapy from 1999 to 2008. He is the author of more than 80 articles and a book entitled Crossroads, Stories at the Intersections. We're very pleased to have them with us, and they also have several of the poets included in their anthology who will be reading for you today. So please join me in welcoming Elizabeth and Ted.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Thank you for coming as well. Let me just give you a bit of an overview of what might happen this afternoon, and let's make it as rich as possible. Elizabeth and I will make just a few opening comments about how the book came to be and some of the work that we've done in creating it. And then she and I will read some of our poems as well as poems of others. And we have two of the poets here who will read their poem. And we've asked them to select at least one other poem in the book. And then we'll have some time after all of that for a bit of discussion about the book and about poetry and about grief and loss. So delighted that you're here with us and so on. My work for about 35 years, as you heard from the earlier introduction, has been related to the realm of grief and loss. And when people are dealing with disruptive changes in their lives, their story changes. And some people not only write their story, begin to be a poet, sit down at the kitchen table, and their heart pours out on paper, or they begin to tell their story to friends or neighbors or a counselor or a therapist. But many also look for books. Reynolds Price, in his book about his spinal cancer called A Whole New Life, he said there came a time as he was dealing with his spinal cancer when he didn't need another pill, didn't need another pain control, didn't need another regimen, but what he needed was a story of someone living with spinal cancer. And so, since he couldn't find that story, he wrote his own, and it's called A Whole New Life. And so, in some ways, that's the way that this book has come to be. Let me give you the catalyst, because there's always a catalyst for a book for each of us. I travel around to do workshops and training and meet people around grief and loss. And a few years ago, I was in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and I had found several years before the Scottish Poetry Library. If you know Edinburgh at all, it's down at the bottom of the Royal Mile, right next to the Parliament building, and it's this wonderful repository of Scottish poetry. And I had just found the place and just loved going sitting there. It's a bit like a bookstore like this, except in this case it's not a store, but rather a library of the great Scottish poets, contemporary as well as from long ago. And for the first time, about 5 years ago, I found that they had published three small volumes, what I discovered later in the publishing field are called gift books. One was a book of small book of love poems. Another was a book of birth poems. And the third book is a volume called Lament, Scottish Poems for Funerals and for Consolation. I picked it up and began to read it because here were about 35 poems by Scottish poets, and I was just curious to see what they might say about the theme and to hear the different voices. And I was carrying the book around, and it suddenly hit me. I can't remember exactly how long later that, hey, we could do that in Minnesota. Hey, I wonder if there is such a book in Minnesota. Gosh, why don't we have such a book like that in Minnesota? Just that rumination of thoughts of so many wonderful writers in Minnesota. I thought, had it been done? Could it be done? Might it be done? And so on. And so there was the germ of the idea to try to think, might there be a book of poems by Minnesota poets addressing what Elizabeth and I came to call themes of loss and renewal? I knew if I was going to go forward on such a project, I needed a colleague because this was going to be a big project. And I was looking for someone who both knew something about grief and loss, but also who might have some feet in the literary world that I did not. I had some feet there, 2 feet, I suppose, but my work was primarily in the field of grief and loss and family studies and family matters, and so knew that was an asset, but wanted to have a colleague who brought some other perspectives and joined hands with Elizabeth, and she'll come up in just a few minutes to tell her side of the story. But what transpired was a 5-year relationship. We thought it might be brief, that we could do this quickly, but naively, but it took 5 years to gather the poems, begin to select the poems that appear in this wonderful volume that fits even with the weather outside now. The wind blows and the ice breaks and so on. So maybe that's just a bit of background. Let me even share a couple of poems to start with, and then have Elizabeth come and share her story, and we'll have our other voices and poets to come up and share theirs. The first poem in the volume is by Susan Williams, and she introduces this theme of the importance of words and experiences and metaphors for grief and loss. It's a poem called The Poet Says Grief. The poet says grief never leaves, only changes. It waits outside doors, keeps a place at the table, hides in the high room with mirrors to the wall, flings from the attic to the roof of the mouth, whispers at windows, slips out with the smoke, creeps eave to eave like a grin, gathers with night in the trees when we won't let it in. Finding words, metaphors for the stories, the grief of our lives. For myself, I did the same a number of years ago while I was dealing with, in this case, a separation and a divorce, the ending of a relationship and a marriage, and was reflecting on my own experiences and was aware of some of my own struggles to express my grief. Is that a male issue or is that a human issue? Probably a bit of both. And so here's a poem of mine that appears in the volume called Male Tears. Tears well up and seek surface drainage, blocked by poor priming, clogged pipes, inexperience, rocky soil. They reluctantly return to their storage place to await a plumber or a handyman. Male Tears. Well, perhaps you even see and hear by these two poems, one by Susan Williams, one by me, you begin to hear some of the range of voices, how different people express some of their notions of grief and loss. What Elizabeth and I are especially proud of is that we think we have collected a wonderful set of about 140 poems that deal with the arc of loss and grief. It's not just death and dying, but it's also abuse, it's aging, it's dealing with chronic conditions, it's dealing with divorce, it's dealing with war. And to have all of these written by Minnesota poets is something that we're especially proud of, and we're proud of the volume and delighted that you're here today to help us share some of the poems. I'll call on Elizabeth, my colleague, to share her story, and then we'll hear some other voices as we go on.
I came to this work from the trenches. Had an 18-year-old daughter who was a freshman in college. Boom, a phone call, and she's dead. Car accident. And I fell into a black hole from which I didn't think I'd ever crawl out. But here I am, and it's 25 years ago. So I had pretty much gotten my head straight when Ted proposed this volume. And when he did, by goodness, I knew that this was my task. This was work that I could do. In the meantime, I'd gone to grad school and gotten, I had been a nurse originally, I think you heard that, but I'd gone to grad school and gotten advanced degrees in creative writing and literature. And so going into the literary part of it was going to be part of what I did. I don't need to say a whole lot else about me and my journey. I think that's probably enough. But I do want a chance to read a couple of things to you. So I'm going to read one of the early poems in the book in honor of our weather, and you can make the connection. This poem is by Larry Shug. and it's entitled Windstorm. In the eye of the night, I lie awake, half afraid, half in awe of the wind, penetrating every crack in my being. I think of my brother and his wife in the next town downwind, open-eyed and clinging to each other as the wind that mocks everything to which we think we're anchored roars through our lives. I see them leaning in the gale, how tightly they must be holding each other, like roots gripping the soil, as my brother's cancer blows away his time, minutes flying off like shingles from a roof. And I hear the cry in his wife's heart, drowning even the howling outside their walls. I roll closer to my own wife this night, circle her in my arms desperately. The second poem I want to read is by Meridel LeSueur, and her name goes back in Minnesota poetry for a long time. She was born in 1900, came of age during the 30s, worked in the labor movements, worked for social justice. Her works speak of so many ways in which we can be just and unjust. And we wanted to include not just our personal stories in this book, but some of the societal stories that fill us with grief, that cause grief, that represent what kind of griefs we have to live through. So Meridel's poem is called Dead in Bloody Snow. I am an Indian woman, witness to my earth, witness for my people. I am the nocturnal door, the hidden cave of your sorrow. Like you, hidden deep in furrow and dung of the charnel mound. I heard the craven passing of the white soldiers and saw them shoot at wounded knee upon the sleeping village and ran with the guns at my back until we froze in our blood on the snow. I speak from old portages, where they pursued and shot into the river crossing all the grandmothers of Black Hawk. I speak from the smoke of grief, from the broken stone and the cry with the women crying from the marsh, trail and tears of drouthed women, O bitter barren, O bitter barren. I run, homeless. I arrive in the gun sight, beside the white square houses of abundance. My people starve in the time of the bitter moon. I hear my ghostly people crying, ahey, ahey, ahey. Rising from our dusty dead, the sweet grass, the skull marking the place of loss and flight, I sing, holding my severed head to my dismembered child, a people's dream that died in bloody snow. I'd like to call now on Carol Pierce Bjorley, who will read from her own work and then perhaps another poem that has caught her eye in our volume. Thanks, Carol.
Thanks. I always feel a little odd being called a Minnesota poet because I don't sound like one, and I sometimes don't feel like one, but I've been here long enough to be called the Minnesota poet, so I guess that's a privilege, especially knowing the Minnesota poets that are in this book. But I did grow up in Richmond, Virginia. Nothing I can do about that. I'm going to read the poem I wrote first because it's in the section of the book that comes first. And one thing I love about this book is the arc that it takes, how it starts with like a conflagration of grief, this fire, and then moves into the blue sky and the possibilities afterwards. So mine is in the section called The Wind Blows, and the title is Ambushed. Just this side of the Paul Bunyan State Forest, a showy lady slipper hidden by a fern startles, poses, dangles her pink toes. Sometimes a word comes, or a whole line, and a poem transcends, like the double rainbow in my rearview mirror. Then there's a routine mammogram surprise. And as an antidote to that, the first poem in this section, The Sky Begins to Blue, is titled Blue. And Mary Logie wrote this poem. And I just think the word, of course, I'm a poet. I love words. Words can just stand alone. You can say to a group of people, blue. And that would be enough, you know. So I love that she titled this poem, Blue. Blue. The ones we love, the dead, hover above our heads like balloons from a day at the fair. Our love is the string, the sky, well, you know what the sky is, endless blue, all that is promised. We are afraid we will forget what it was like to have them in our life. We clutch at the string. We are children. It has been a long day. But if we realize how long our love is, if we realize how big our life is, if we can see how blue that sky would be with the balloon right in the middle of it, we would let go and walk away. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Carol. Maybe just a comment about Minnesota poets, given Carol's comment about her accent and coming from Virginia as well. We were looking, our definition for Minnesota poets was any poet that had a strong Minnesota connection. They were either born here and have lingered here some of their life, or moved here, or have worked here for a chunk of time, so that there's enough time for Minnesota to leave its mark on them. And so that was our definition, not someone who had to be born here, but someone who had spent a chunk of their life as a student or worker, as Carol has, and so on. But we were also knowledgeable as we were doing this that while we chose deliberately for this to be a book by Minnesota poets, that once you begin to open the door to grief and loss and renewal, there's no way but what it's a universal theme. And again, back to Scotland, I ask one of my colleagues from Scotland, Valerie Gillis, who is they call it the mocker, the poet laureate of Edinburgh from 2005 to 2008, to read the book and see, was this a book that would be accessible in a place called Scotland or other places in the world? She wrote these words that are on the jacket of the book. In their many voices, the poets of Minnesota explore universal concerns. These poets can take on anything, can infuse any experience with meaning. Brave verses, so broad yet intimate, awaken our capacity to be open to life's ebbs and flows, an enlightening handbook of hope where poetry is both the release and the reward. So while it's a book of Minnesota poets, it's a universal book, and we hope it will be used far and wide. Well, let's hear another voice. So Roseanne Lloyd, longtime writer and poet in this area, graces us today to share her poem and another poem.
Thank you, Ted, and thank you, everyone who came today. I once drove down to Madison for a reading at a bookstore. Only 3 people came, but they were so enthusiastic. So a small group can be a success, too. So I hope I can read to each one of you. The poem that Ted and Betty chose to put in the book is from my first book, and I was so happy to see it picked up again because my book is out of print. It's called Tap Dancing for Big Mom. It has been reprinted. This poem has been reprinted in a few places. I've written for the last 30 years mostly about troubled families, starting because of my own childhood, and addictions. But this one is written from the third person, like it's not clear it's about me, but it is. And it uses a lot of rhymes, because what I've discovered is sometimes when I'm writing about something very difficult, using rhyme and repeating helps it be contained, you know, helps the danger be contained. So it's called "This Child." This child is about to be touched, touched funny, told to shut up about the fast lesson down, how if you rub a nipple, it sticks out hard. This child is about to hide her nipples inside her shirt, inside her undershirt. This child is about to be forced to do without a father. Hurts too much. This child is about to cry at his touch, about to run and hide. This child is about to be deprived of childhood. It's all shut up. This child is about to be touched by the power of a man who lies, who will disregard her cries, call her seductive, beautiful slut. This child is about to give up clothes silky to the touch, hide her nipples inside her shirt. This child will give her childhood up, her own tentative touch. I'm wearing a silk shirt today. Yes. And for a lot of my work is about, if I speak up, I know that if any of you have not talked about abuse, there's always some way to find help. So go do that. Or go back when it comes back around. The second poem I'll read is from the last part of the book, too, which is more light touch. And it's called Apartments of the Dead by Barton Sutter. And I thought later, oh, I like this, but because I've lost two brothers, and I do, it's about driving by houses of people who have died, so I know I do this thing, so I just kind of get follow my feelings. But then I realized he talks about breasts in here too. So it's Apartments of the Dead. Somewhere along in your 40s, you realize a lot of people are dead, but not you. Not yet. Driving past the hospital, you recall that curly-haired medical student, her quick hands, her eager mouth. She had a sweet apartment above the park, fragrant with eucalyptus. Remember those silly games you played with her silver stethoscope? She lost both breasts, those breasts you used to kiss. She's gone. And you can't believe you can't visit your pal, the poet, whose tiny apartment was jammed with books, laundry, beer cans, ashtrays big as hubcaps. You'd clear a space and smoke and smoke and laugh and laugh. That room smelled bad, but also good. He's gone, beneath the snow, beneath the earth. You drive by your grandmother's place. When she opened the door, she'd shout your name as if she'd won the lottery. Then add immediately, "You want something to eat?" She had stubble on her chin and a glint in her eye, and she shared a juicy story she'd been keeping warm for weeks. She wore too much perfume, but it couldn't cut the odor of coffee in the room. Perhaps you don't miss those people as you miss their apartments, those little chatterboxes, those friendly, small efficiencies. You imagine now two men making love in that quiet place above the park, an old woman stroking her cat in the poet's rank apartment, a retarded man struggling to open a can of tuna in that room where your grandmother laughed over photographs of her youth. How sad, you think. How strange. Then the car behind you honks, and you see that the light has changed. Yeah, I mean, as I can see from your faces, it's when we're driving, we're really alone, and nobody's interrupting us. There's another poem in here called Commuting, like that, and so many feelings and memories can go through us just in that one red light. So thank you all very much.
Thanks, Roseanne, and thanks, Carol. I wanted to make a couple of other remarks and then ask you if there were things you heard that sparked either comments or questions from you. It's imagery and metaphor that makes for poetry. At one time, also, rigid meter made for poetry, but that's not so much true anymore. You heard in Apartments for the Dead, for instance, all of those things, all those visual things that connect the poet, the speaker, to a larger experience. And it is metaphor and imagery and symbol and that wonderful language of poetry that gives a particular voice to high levels of feeling. Someone has said, a couple of people have said to me a few times, why poetry? You know, there are a lot of essays written that explain it. Well, who can explain it? Why poetry? Because the language of poetry can take all of that feeling that threatens to overwhelm you and bring it down. It gathers it in and it brings it down into something small enough that you can take bites of it a little at a time, take it all in, digest it, and survive it. And so that's the language of poetry that is so wonderful for those who either write through grief, as I did, or read through grief, as I did. And it was the imagery of the wind and the ice that we wanted to use to organize the book. So Carol, when she was reading, identified a couple of the ways we did this, because we didn't want to say, here's shock, and here's anger, and so on and so forth. Those things are all true, but they wouldn't make a poetry book. So I'm just going to read you the section titles here. The first section is a prelude, you know, kind of when everything is just getting going. And then the second section is the wind whirls around us. The next section is the ice cracks beneath us. And then the ice breaks and the wind blows. And those are where some of the most intense poems occur. And then, as Carol said, we move to the sky begins to blue. And the last section is a bird sings, because we do make it through grief. And as I have quoted 100 times, this line from Hemingway, I'll leave you with this too. The world breaks everyone, and afterward, some are strong at the broken places. So I would invite your comments or your questions, or if there's a favorite poem you want to read or refer to us.
Anything also about how the book has been put together? What are there any sorts of questions that would be helpful to you?
Could you talk? Yes,
please.
How did you go about organizing this and contacting colleagues? Were they colleagues of yours or?
Some were colleagues of mine here at the university, and I'm sure you'll recognize a lot of the names from the U.
Question, how did we find the poets and how did we organize them?
How did we organize, how did we find the poets, and were they colleagues? Yes, thanks for reminding me. And I answered the colleagues part. How we found the poets. Well, I knew a lot of the poetry that had been published in the last 30 or 40 years here. And we did make an attempt to have it have poets represented over time, not just people who are writing today. But having been, you know, a literary type and having taught in the English department and gotten my degrees there, I'm ripe for research. So one summer, I went to the Loft Library, the Loft Writer Center downtown, and I sat on the floor and I read all the poetry books. And see these little yellow tabs? I had yellow tabs in all these books, and I would copy them. Some of them I hand copied because I couldn't find a Xerox machine. But at any rate, I made copies. And so we had a lot of poems to choose from. And Ted has his collection, and he was also alert, and he brought some from the field of the therapeutics that I would not have found. So that's how we collected them. And the other question about how we organized them, that was about 4 out of the 5 years. Because as I said, we didn't want to make it too formulaic, but I didn't want to just dump them in there alphabetically. They would be of less use. So that's how the sections came about. Thanks for that question. Are you a writer? Yes, good. Yes, we'll collect something of yours on a better topic someday. Yes.
Let me just add a bit to that. Several people have called this an anthology. Elizabeth and I do not, because an anthology would perhaps look at the whole range of Minnesota poets from as early as we could find them till today, and representing people from the various time sections that have transpired in this state. We call it a collection. We call it a selection of poems because we did the collecting and we did the selecting. And as I mentioned earlier, part of our, as we began to sit on the floor of the loft or in the floor of my bedroom or look at all of the volumes that we could find of Minnesota poets, we were looking for a range of subjects. And so as you've even heard in the voices today, some of them dealing with family manners and abuse, and some dealing with grief and loss, and some dealing with cancer, and some dealing with death. And we wanted also to get that range. If you pick up a volume of poetry, even here in the bookstore, there are very few poets who have written a complete volume of poetry of grief. Usually in a volume of 30 or 40 poems, there may be 3 or 4. And so that was part of the collection process as well. We also chose only to use, with a few exceptions, poets that had been published. And the reason we did that was that we wanted the poems to have at least stood the test of a filter done by a publisher, by a collector, that they were publishable, that they had merit, and so on. To do a call for poems, you'll get a whole range of poems, and some of those are important that they be written. They're important that they find voice. They may be written at our kitchen table or at our desk or our computer, but they may not be worthy yet of sharing with others. They're more for our own expression of grieving. We wanted ones also that had been published in some ways. Thank you for that question. Other questions or requests or comments? Yes, Roseanne.
Well, I was going to ask you to comment on how it seems so painful when you're writing about grief. And either of you had suggestions or just share what it's like for you.
Yes, it's very painful.
The question again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just so we've got it on the podcast.
Right. The question is, what is the experience of writing difficult poems? Or poems in difficult times? Poetry will get it out of your body. And that's my best response. It hurts. You cry. You scream. You swear. My journals are full of some pretty ugly language, and I really should burn them, but I haven't yet. It hurts. It hurts. But you get a little piece of the hurt out of your body as you write it down. I'm sure there's a way to explain that that isn't quite so metaphoric, getting it out of your body. But that is what happens. It's there, it's on the page, and you're just a little stronger every time you do that, even if you're crying and screaming. Could you add to that, Roseanne?
Thank you. I think that was just True.
It's true. Very true.
Well, also writing it down makes it real.
Okay, Carol Bjorley has said, writing it down makes it real, and that is very true. That is very, very true. When my daughter was killed, I did not believe it. I did not believe it for days and days and weeks and months, and I kept dreaming that she was okay or that I had gotten out there in the middle of that icy road and stopped the truck, and when I woke up, it was going to be all better. But when I woke up, it wasn't all better, and I had to write it down again. And the other reason I had to write it down is I had told everybody my story so many times, I was about to lose some friends. They didn't want to hear it again. They'd been good to me. But how many times could they sit there and listen to that sad story? So there are so many ways that writing about grief or anything else, it doesn't have to be bad. And I hope if you are writing that sometimes it's about the good stuff, because that's just as important. Other questions?
Well, just let me add to this one as well. We were going to do a little tag team here. We were struck the other night, we had a reading at the Loft with about 20 of the poets, and so had this range of readings. And one of the things I think that was a bit of a surprise to each of us was that as harsh as some of the poems are, as honest and direct, as full of some of the pain of grief that many of the poems are, that several of the poets got up without any prompting, without our knowing what they were going to say that they thought when they read the book, as pleased as they were to have their own poems in the book, that they thought reading it might be a bit of a downer. But many of them said that to the contrary, reading the poems, they left the reading of the book, you know, and this was done privately in their own homes, I presume, they left the reading with more energy than when they came. They had it as a kind of uplifting experience, and I think it's what Elizabeth is talking about. For some people to put it into words releases something. I remember a man in a workshop I was doing years ago who claimed that he was not a writer. He said, I don't even like to write checks. That probably fits for all of us. So he was a writer, not a writer at many levels. But he said one night he woke in the middle of the night again, could not sleep, knew that he needed to sleep because he had to work the next morning. He walked down to his kitchen to get a glass of milk or a cup of tea or something just to soothe him so he could go back to sleep. And he said, all of a sudden I started writing, and all of a sudden my shoulders lifted. It was began to put it to paper, and I think that's what you're describing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you all for being here. It's been a pleasure for us to have you listen to all of these wonderful works, ours as well as all of our poets who read and the other people they invoked. And someday, pick up a pen and write something yourself. It doesn't have to be sad, but try it. It is a beautiful thing to write.